Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice.
Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Today, we're welcoming back our current chair, Lucien Gervain, Associate Professor of Law at Belmont University College of Law and Director of Criminal Justice Studies. But Lucien, thank you for joining us again.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about all the things we've been doing as a section the last few months.
It's been a busy time for the section, and there's still so much to look forward to. We're coming up in the last quarter of your time as chair for the section. So why don't we start with talking about the spring meeting that was hosted in your hometown of Nashville?
That's right. It's hard to believe that we're moving into summer already. And we had a great spring conference here in Nashville just a little while ago. It was a multi-day event. We actually started with something that we're hoping to do a lot more of, and that is to take the opportunity when we're in a city visiting as a section to reach out more directly to students. And so on Wednesday, as we began to kick things off in Nashville, we held a special event on careers in criminal justice here at Belmont University, and we invited law students and undergraduate students from all around Nashville to come and learn more about what we do as a section and also learn more about what it is to be a member of the criminal justice community. It was a great turnout, very energized group who were excited to hear about what this kind of a career looks like, and I think that was a really fun way to start off our week here. We then did something on Thursday that we've never done before, but that I'm hopeful we're going to continue doing because it was just incredibly well received and incredibly important. That was that we had the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force meet here in Nashville. And of course, they've been working all year to really sort of address the unique issues that are faced by women in the criminal justice community. And they've been holding listening sessions all around the country. And so they did that here in Nashville as well. But in addition to doing the listening sessions, they also put together an incredible symposium event related to the issues that they have been tackling. So some of the things that we were able to hear and learn about and engage on were issues like implicit bias, shattering the glass ceiling, a day in the life of women in criminal justice, and the challenges facing women in criminal justice. And so I think it was really an incredible opportunity. I was really honored to be able to be there and to participate in that. And I just felt like there were some incredible takeaways, some really amazing discussions that happened. And I really want to thank Chair-elect Kim Parker, First Vice Chair April Fraser Kamara for their work along with the task force in putting together this great event and for all the work that they are continuing to do. That's a three-year task force, so there's a lot more to do, obviously, but they've just made incredible strides this year. And then Friday, you know, we have our spring CLE, which is our sort of annual tradition as part of the Spring Institute. And this year, we focused that conference on the issue of diverse perspectives on criminal justice reform, which really has been a theme for my year as chair of the section. And it was a real opportunity to bring together members of the criminal justice community with these really differing and diverse perspectives, these different roles, but this collective commitment to justice, to fairness, to making our system the best that it can be. And we really saw the strengths of bringing all of those groups together to have a conversation in the programming on Friday in Nashville. So we just had this array of speakers talking about things like, what criminal justice reform is needed, what kinds of things are we doing now, what does the future hold, what direction are we moving in as a country, and the issues that they touched on just covered a huge spectrum of the kinds of things that we're really interested in focusing on today, like the idea of cash bail, conviction integrity units, innovation in criminal justice, issues surrounding mass incarceration and the First Step Act. And we made sure that the panels were led and they included prosecutors, judges, defense counsel, law enforcement personnel, academics, policymakers, other people, so that each of the discussions was really rich. And at the end of the day, we had the opportunity to really hear from all of these different people about what it is that we need to do as the larger criminal justice community to make our system work the way we want it to. You know, one of the things I thought was really interesting, we often talk a lot about criminal justice reform from the national perspective and the role of Congress. But we also really wanted to highlight all of the work being done at the state level during our meeting here in Nashville. So to that end, we had one of the panels dedicated to that issue of state reform. And it was really amazing to hear because the states have been incredibly active in this area recently, and they're having great success. And it turns out that a lot of the innovation and experimenting with criminal justice reform that's happening at the state level, that's moving up to the national level. And so when you see the things that are being talked about and implemented at the national stage, a lot of that has really come from the states. And so they're being incubators for us to kind of try to see what might work well. And so we really wanted to highlight that, talk about the importance of that kind of work. You know, my takeaway from the spring meeting, that the Friday conference about criminal justice reform, was an incredibly positive one, because we heard from all of these different voices who had come together to advocate for ways that we can change the way that we address crime and punishment and reentry. And I really found it inspiring, and it kind of, I think, renewed our resolve that we're doing some incredibly important work that's affecting the lives of individuals in very meaningful ways, and we should feel good about the efforts that we're undertaking. You know, I think it was also interesting that the conversation here in Nashville about criminal justice reform continued well after we finished our conference. So just a couple of weeks after the Criminal Justice Section Conference on Criminal Justice Reform, the topic was once again front and center here because we had the governors of both Tennessee and Kentucky meet at Belmont University College of Law to discuss the ways that they were working to change their criminal justice systems. And so I think we find ourselves at a really unique time in history. And I think priority for us as a section is to seize this opportunity to ensure that the discussions and that the momentum that we're currently seeing results in real and permanent change. So I just thought it was a really great spring conference, and I want to thank everybody who helped put that together. Of course, the ABA staff, who did just an amazing job putting this big event together for us here in my hometown. And I think that the conversations and the networks and relationships that were created here in Nashville during those discussions are going to continue, and I think we're going to see a lot more really interesting work coming from that.
I would agree. I was in attendance during the meeting, and for those that are listening that are interested in watching some of those panels, we do have those available on our section's YouTube channel. So the American Bar Association Criminal Justice Section has a YouTube channel. You can watch most of the women's symposium. We did have a special panel on implicit bias, and we, as a practice, do not film those conversations so that the audience participation can be more authentic. But otherwise, the rest of the paneling is available for both days, the women's symposium and the formal day of CLE. And also, if you heard mention of some topics that sound a little familiar from the podcast, I was able to sit down with two of those panels after they finished their discussion in the CLE program. We did post an episode with our Conviction Integrity Unit's prosecutors panel, and that was great. So if you're interested in hearing a follow-up in addition to watching the panel discussion, that is available on the podcast. And additionally, we had the Mass Incarceration and the First Step Act panel on the podcast as well. And that was also interesting because you were able to recruit one of the attorneys that helped Cyntoia Brown gain clemency. And so that was interesting to be able to hear about that process. It was a great program.
Yeah, so we had, on the weekend, we had a number of committee meetings. We also had the council meet. We discussed a lot of resolutions that had been presented to council, talked a lot about the work of the council over the next year, sort of planning the direction that we see ourselves moving in. And it's always nice to get that group together. We often also have presentations where people will come in and talk about projects around the country that can be inspiring to the work of the council, that council members can take back to their home jurisdictions and share. In fact, as part of that, we had the president of the Florida Bar Association come and speak to us about a criminal justice summit that had been held earlier in the year in Florida, something that I think is just a great template for application in other jurisdictions. And so we're going to be working with the Florida Bar to put together some materials that we can then send out to other jurisdictions in hopes that they might follow suit. And again, in a similar way to what we did in Nashville, it was an opportunity for the Florida Bar to bring together different people from different perspectives who hold different roles in their criminal justice community and talk about what's happening in Florida specifically and what are the things things that they can do and achieve. And I'm looking forward to seeing a report that's being created right now by Professor Ellen Podgor at Stetson University, who is the reporter for the Criminal Justice Summit there, where she'll be detailing the discussions that occurred, the areas for work that were identified, and some of the thoughts about reform efforts moving forward. I think that's just going to be a great template, and I'm excited to see that kind of work implemented other places. And I think the criminal justice section is going to help try to make that a reality, because I think, you know, in addition to the work that we do on the national level, the section is incredibly interested in engaging at the state level. Again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the panel that we held at Spring about state innovations, the section is very interested in being part of those discussions and helping to facilitate those discussions. And I think this is one of the ways that we're going to be working to do that in the coming years.
So you mentioned the work of the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force, and you also mentioned the announcement of a new task force in your opening remarks in Nashville. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so as I noted, the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force has been doing a lot of work this year. That was created back at the end of the summer, right when I began my year. And in Nashville, I was able to announce a new task force, and that is the creation of the Corporate Criminal Liability Task Force, which will be getting underway this summer. And that's a group that's going to be considering issues surrounding the scope of corporate liability in the criminal context, things like the breadth of the respondeat superior test, the role of prosecutorial discretion in this area, things that are really being discussed a lot in the Department of Justice at the moment. And so we think that this is a great opportunity for us as a section to sort of weigh in on where we see room for amending the way that this process works. What do we think is working well? What is not? We know in recent years there's been a lot of tension that's grown between corporations and employees because of the way the standard is implemented. There's been a lot of concern about the breadth of the respondeat superior test and how easily it can be applied and the way that that affects the manner in which prosecutions occur. So I'm looking forward to this task force diving in on those issues and giving us some thoughts and recommendations as a section about what might be the best path forward here. And so we can look forward to some materials coming out of that task force in the next year. Also in Nashville, as part of our council discussions over the weekend, the Council of the Criminal Justice Section created a new task force dealing with the issue of the First Step Act, and in particular, the risk assessment aspects of the First Step Act. And so that has gotten underway immediately, in part because there are some very tight deadlines that the Department of Justice currently has in relation to the First Step Act, where they are required to create some risk assessment tools that will be then used by the Department of Corrections. And so we're creating this task force, and it's already begun its work, to consider best practices in this area and what we know does and doesn't work well, and how risk assessment should be utilized, so that as the DOJ begins to roll out its thoughts on this issue and we begin to see policy created in response to the requests and requirements of the First Step Act, that we can be a part of that conversation. I think that task force, based on the discussions that we had at council, will also, once it begins this very sort of particular inquiry related to the First Step Act, will then broaden its scope and will continue to work in the future looking as a task force at the issue of risk assessment more generally, because that really is an area that's becoming very prominent in criminal justice, in the criminal justice community, and we felt like the time was right for us as a section to have a task force to address this issue and to think about what that's going to look like as we begin to use it more and more. And it does relate, I think, a lot to some of the other reforms that we've been talking about, you know, the cash bail issue that we talked about in Nashville on one of our panels. You know, risk assessment is part of that, obviously. And so this is really a big issue, and I think it permeates the criminal justice process from beginning to end in many ways at this point. And so I think it's a great area for us to step into and begin to have a more formal discussion. The other task force I'll mention is the plea bargaining task force. That's a task force that I announced during my opening remarks at the Fall Institute, and that has begun to get underway. We've put together an incredible group that represents a lot of different perspectives on this issue. We have prosecutors, we have defenders, we have policy people coming in, we have academics, and this group is going to begin meeting over the summer to begin thinking about the plea bargaining system. You know, as we know today, pleas of guilt account for about 97 to 98% of all convictions in the federal system, and about 94 to 95% of convictions at the state system. And according to a recent government estimate, about 75% of those pleas are actual plea agreements between the defendant and the government that include some kind of offer of leniency or some kind of threat of additional punishment. And so what this group is going to do is they're going to more closely examine the role of plea bargaining in our modern system of criminal justice with a couple of goals. The first goal is to consider how plea bargaining has developed over time and what advantages and challenges have resulted from that development. And then secondly, the second goal of the task force is going to be to consider the best paths forward and potential solutions to the challenges that have been identified by the group. And I think we're going to see some really interesting stuff come from this larger group, this collaboration that we're creating, because we are going to have the perspective of so many different people who see the system a little bit differently. They see different sides of it. Yet I think from what I'm hearing, they share many similar concerns about the challenges that the current system has created. And so I'm really looking forward to that. That actually is a group that I'll be co-chairing.
And we'll look forward to following up. We'd love to have the plea bargaining task force make an appearance on the podcast to talk more in detail about the issue. I believe I heard someone say it's the current criminal justice system right now is plea bargaining, something to that effect.
That's right. So in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court said, and really a landmark decision, because it hadn't been said before, although people sort of knew that this is what had been created. They said that the modern system of criminal justice is a plea bargaining system. It's not a system of trials. It's a system of pleas. And that's the kind of thing that we've really seen change in recent years. Up until that case in 2012, we continued to focus so much on trials, which of course is vitally important, but we weren't really recognizing the fact that in the vast majority of cases, there is no trial. There's a plea. And so in Lafler and Cooper cases back in 2012, Lafler and Fry, you begin to see the court talk about plea bargaining in a different way. And so that's the kind of thing that we're going to be tackling as a task force.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more. So it was a great event. Thanks so much for hosting the section in Nashville. I had a great time. I know others did as well. And we've got a couple other events coming up for the section, one this month and then one next month abroad. Do you want to tell us about those?
Yes, absolutely. So on May 29th and 30th at Fordham University School of Law, we're going to have the 10th Annual Prescription for Criminal Justice Forensics Conference. This is just a great conference that we've been doing for quite some time now. And it's an opportunity for lawyers and judges and others to gain an insight into the foundations of science and scientific methods, you know, the growing use of statistical analysis in forensic science, some of the latest developments in this landscape. It's such a fascinating area where you bring science into the legal realm and the ways that we use that and the ways that it can be helpful and the ways that it can pose risks. And so I'd highly recommend that to anybody who has an interest or whose practice involves those areas. I think you're going to learn a lot. And I know that every year when they convene, they have just cutting edge issues. They have people who are at the height of their fields who really know what's going on and where things are moving next. And so I think it's a really engaging and great conference to be a part of.
So for those of you listening that are interested in attending the Forensics Conference, you can still register for that in New York on the 29th and 30th, and the information can be found on the CJS website. And also we hosted an interview with the chair of that conference, Matt Riedel, and he spoke about the evolution of forensic evidence in the courtroom and also gave us a little bit more insight into this conference. So let's continue and talk about Prague. Lucien, go ahead and tell us about that event.
Yeah, so on June 27th and 28th, we're going to have our third Global White Collar Crime Institute in Prague, Czech Republic. And this is just a great opportunity to talk about what's going on in the international white collar crime field. The first one of these we hosted was in 2015 in Shanghai. And then in 2017, we went to Sao Paulo. And it's really an opportunity for us every 2 years to one, see what's happening in this field, but two, to introduce our memberships to a new part of the world. You know, part of the global White Collar Crime Institute goal was to take us to places that we've never been before. And so each time we select a venue, it takes us a couple of years just because we've not been to the location before. So that's why we do it every 2 years instead of every 1 year. But we try to find a place where we feel like our membership would really benefit from learning about the issues that are present there in that region, and also getting to meet people that they may not have encountered otherwise, so they can create new networks and make new connections. that can be really important for them learning what's going on in the field, and also, of course, for business development and other things. So when we convene in Prague, we're going to have an opening panel where we're going to meet the enforcers. And this is always really popular. It gives us an opportunity to sit down with high-ranking government officials from around the world and sort of hear what their priorities are, what do they see coming next. And then, of course, there's the opportunity for the audience to interact with them and ask questions. And I think people really get a lot from this. So we're going to welcome Matthew Miner, the Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the U.S. Department of Justice, along with Matthew Wagstaff, who is head of bribery and corruption at the UK's Serious Fraud Office, and then finally Pavel Zeman, who is the Prosecutor General of the Czech Republic. And so I think that's going to be a great opening to this conference. And then we're going to move into to topics such as lessons learned from the Volkswagen investigation, data privacy, and the GDPR. We're going to talk about extradition and red notices, anti-corruption trends, what's happening with Brexit and how Brexit is going to affect global enforcement and enforcement, particularly in the European region. And then on the second day, we're also going to have another keynote type address by Dr. Adrian Jung, who is the public prosecutor and special counsel on internal investigations to the German Federal Ministry of Justice. And he's working on some really interesting legislation in Germany that has resulted from the Volkswagen case. And he's going to be talking about the work that they're doing there and what's coming next in Germany. And of course, because the Volkswagen case has been so significant, what Germany ends up doing in that regard is likely to influence much of the legislation and much of the approach throughout Europe generally. And so I think that, again, is a session not to be missed, to hear what it is that Germany is planning to do and how they're going to sort of move forward with this issue. So, again, for anybody in the white-collar field or who's interested in international criminal law or white-collar crime, this is just a great opportunity to go to a beautiful city, to network with the whole host of new individuals that they may not have had the opportunity to network and interact with before, and to hear from experts in the field on some of these issues that I think are going to be really interesting to people, and also that are going to be the kinds of issues that are going to affect this field in the coming years. So I'm hoping to see a lot of people turn out for that event as well.
All right. Well, thank you for that update on Prague. We'll look forward to hearing more about that conference. And for those listening that are interested in registering for that conference, again, that is also posted on our CJS website, so you can go online and register there. So now let's move into some programs that the section has that are ongoing. You're kicking off the Diversity and Inclusion Fellowship Program once again this summer. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. So that's an incredible program that we launched a couple of years ago that brings in a diverse group of individuals who are really interested in learning more about the work of the criminal justice section. And it's a formal program in which we really include them in the work of the committees. They come to council meetings so that they can participate and sort of learn more about that process. There's mentorship aspects to it. And the hope is that at the end of the fellowship program, they've learned and become engaged in the section in such a way that they're going to be really active members going forward and continue the great contributions that they made as fellows through other means, whether it be becoming a committee chair or applying to become a member of the council or getting involved in some of the projects and task forces that we engage in, and also increasing the diversity of the section to ensure that our section is representative of the larger legal community and the country. And so now that we're wrapping up our first fellowship program, we're going to be accepting applications for the next fellowship program. And so the application process will be open in June and July. There's a July 31st deadline. So I would encourage anybody who's interested to apply, because I think this is just a great opportunity. And I'm looking forward to welcoming our new fellows this year. So we'll be taking the applications this summer, and then the new fellows will be selected to begin their work with the section in the fall.
That's great. And speaking of young lawyers and building relationships with young lawyers, I believe the mentorship program has been kicked off by the Young Lawyers Committee. Can you just give us a little bit of details around that?
Yeah, so we also have this great mentorship program that the Young Lawyers Committee has been working on for some time now. What they're hoping to do is to use the annual meeting in August of the ABA as an opportunity for people to meet a potential mentor or mentee. And then, of course, even if you're not going to be attending the meeting and you'd rather be connected with somebody in your local jurisdiction, they'll also be working on that throughout the summer and the years to create those opportunities as well. And it's not a huge commitment. So, you know, anything as little as a coffee. And so I would encourage people to think about volunteering for this project. You can sign up online and enroll in this project, and then the Young Lawyers Committee will put you together with a mentor or a mentee, and you can begin that sort of dialogue. And of course, you know, it could become a longer-term interaction that goes on for a long time and creates this really vibrant mentor-mentee relationship. But again, they're not asking for that kind of a commitment. It could be just to grab a cup of coffee. And so I hope people are going to participate in this program because I think they had a lot of success and got a lot of positive feedback from the first time that they did it.
Yeah. And if you're interested in participating, I feel like I sound a little bit like a broken record today, but that's also on the website, so you can enroll online. And then finally, we're coming up on another ABA year, and that means that some council members will be finishing their terms, but that you'll also be welcoming new council members. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that process works?
Yes, so we want to start by thanking everybody who will be rotating off council after the annual meeting in August. The way that the process works is that we accepted nominations for the available openings back at the end of 2018. And what happens is we have a nominating committee that meets at the mid-year meeting of the American Bar Association and reviews all of the nominations and comes up with a list of recommendations. So at this point, that meeting has occurred. And of course, it's always a very, very hard meeting because we have so many incredibly active members who are interested in moving into these other roles and so many people who have just done incredible work. We always have far more people interested in these openings than we actually have openings available. So we work really hard to make sure that we find something to keep them engaged and to make sure that they know just how valuable they are to us and the volunteering and work and service that they do. We also work really hard in the room to make sure, again, that we're achieving all of our goals as a section, goals that include increasing the diversity of the section, goals such as increasing the involvement and the role played by newer attorneys in the section. And so what happens after we do the nominating committee meeting at the mid-year meeting is that the nominations recommendations from the committee will then be given to the council at the annual meeting. And so the way that the process works, we know already that the chair of the section next year will be Kim Parker and that the chair-elect of the section next year will be April Fraser Kamara. We know because of the process that we use that is a three-year process to move into the chair position. But the other positions will be officially made at the annual meeting, and then the individuals who have received those positions will begin serving after the conclusion of the annual meeting.
Thanks so much for giving us a little bit more detail into how that process works. So for those that are interested in getting more involved, they have a better idea of what a path to getting involved on the council looks like. And we've mentioned this before, but just as a refresher, the nominations process for council positions happens in December of a calendar year. There's a lot going on. Thank you, Lucienne, again, for giving us a high-level look at all of the work the section's doing. It's impossible for us to give all the time and attention that all of the great work deserves, but this gives everyone a great glance at some of the high-level things. So thank you again for your time and for joining us.
Thank you. I'm always excited to talk about the work that we're doing. And as you noted, there's so much we could never cover it in one or even 20 episodes. But I'm glad to get a chance to talk about some of the stuff we've been doing in the last few months and think about what's coming up next.
Well, we look forward to the next several months toward the close of your chair year. So thank you again. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Jeff Pod.